We're recording Monday night, just before 9 o'clock. We had the Masters. It was a pretty epic one. F1, a really great race from start to finish. We have some drama in college football. And, of course, drama already unfolding in the NBA with the Phoenix Suns firing their coach, which is pretty impressive, man. That's like four coaches in 4 years. We'll get into it all. But first, let's start off with the Masters. I started watching it. I typically don't watch the first two rounds all too much, kind of kept tabs. Rory McIlroy had a really bad first round, made some moves in the second, and then they called moving day Saturday, and he just played lights out. He had, I believe it was five or six holes. It was the first six holes, I think, he had all threes. First time that's happened in the history of the Masters. Kind of stumbled a little bit in the middle, but then closed out day three. I think he was like five strokes back, and then he ended up being two strokes back. Bryson had a pretty big day as well. Pretty solid on Saturday, and then it just kind of set up an epic match. The last two times that Rory and DeChambeau were teamed up together, and the final pairing was twice. They both happened in the U.S. Open, and we all know how that happened. Roy has not been able to take advantage, but this was his 11th try of completing the career Grand Slam, and he did it. It was pretty epic, man. He started hot, struggled in the middle. What, he had a bogey, a double bogey. Was it three holes of bogeys? Got really tense. I was at the bar watching it. Had the whole bar watching golf. It was a weird Sunday for me. Maybe we can get into that later on too. But
that's a controversy segment.
Controversy
right there,
segment already previewed later in the rest of the
show.
I'm surprised you remember going to the bar to begin with, Rome. But
I just don't know where I ended up.
Yeah.
You're right. That's a controversy segment. Anyways, Roy dropped back, was like a shot back, and then all of a sudden we ended it tied up. Rose had a hell of a Sunday, was in contention, was one of the favorites to win the Masters, and then it was a quick playoff, man. Just ended after one. It ended early enough that they could do the playoff, and Rory comes out on top. Pretty fucking epic. It was great.
Yeah, the overall tournament for Rory, I mean, Rory's chase to win this career Grand Slam, you know, has been kind of years in the making. Or, you know, this was kind of the text conversation we had yesterday, Rome, where you kind of indicated like he was supposed to be like the next Tiger and kind of go on this run, and we've all been waiting for him. And he started out his career, you know, just out of the gates, just such a young age, you know, winning the other three majors, pretty early in his career. When you think about, what was it, 20, I don't know, was it 2012 or something like that when he won the first, but it was like 2014 and stuff like that. He's already there, and he's won the first three and had four majors off the back pretty early in the first couple of years. And like, yeah, he's going to go on this mid-career run, and it never happens. He's been successful in other tournaments, but he's just been waiting kind of for this Masters moment, and he's had his shots, including last year was one where he had his shots and kind of choked down the stretch. And that's kind of just been, all of a sudden it's in his reputation, is that this is going to happen. He's going to get in his head. I was a group texting with a bunch of other friends about it. It's like, oh, it's, you know, he's just his own kind of worst enemy. It's the worst part of golf. No other sport is kind of like this, where like your competition doesn't have to play into it at all. It's you and yourself out there and doing something, and you just know. And his, the poetry kind of this round, because you mentioned going back to his first round, you know, I think he's four under through 14, and then double bogeys the 15, double bogeys the 17, and he's all of a sudden even for his round, I think seven strokes back off of day one. And you're like, man, just choked it away like right down the stretch. And then you mentioned moving day. It wasn't Saturday for him, because it was Friday where he shot a 66. You know, eagles 13 in the second round, birdies 15, shoots a 66. Okay, cool. He's right back in it, low round there. And then on moving day, like you mentioned, shoots another 66. And that round was kind of like he had everything with it. He had two eagles, but also had two bogeys, but in a bunch more birdies in there. And, you know, hey, he's far and away the leader going to the right round. And you're thinking you're getting this showdown between Rory and Bryson, which they kind of got their own little beef in history off the back off a previous major that Rory kind of gave away to Bryson. But Bryson, he was all over the place kind of late in the round and kind of took himself out. And like you said, Justin Rose, you know, I think he shot 7 under on Sunday or something to really put himself in contention there and to give him a chance, which he did. But that the fourth round for Rory was all over the place too, because he just starts off the day, double bogeys off a one on a Sunday. And you're like, man, this ain't it. He's giving it away on the first hole. And then third and fourth hole, he birdies. Birdies 9. All right, cool. He's got it. Birdies 10. You're in it. And then bogeys 11. Double bogeys 13. Bogeys 14. And you're like, oh, the wheels are coming off. At that point, that's when Justin Rose took the outright lead. But then he birdies 15, ties it. Birdies 17, and he's kind of one up. And then really just needed the par on 18, ends up bogeying it and forces the playoff. And just, it was just the range of emotions, like just up and down where you were going for it. And he had the crowd. And I don't know if it was just me and, you know, kind of everyone we know, but it felt like everyone's behind this guy to win this one. Nothing against Justin Rose or anyone in the field. Like, this is the story right now. And when he ended up did winning it, like, the emotion and the crowd and him and falling down. There's a great photo on Twitter of him kind of collapsing to his knees and going to the ground that Ken Griffey Jr. took. I don't know if you saw this. Ken Griffey Jr., professional photographer. You didn't know, but he's got one of the kind of the shots going around the internet right now where he took it. And I think the moment was just there. It was everything you want from a professional sports event, but it's why I don't care what you do with golf. You start another league, you have other tournaments. There's like nothing like the Masters on Sunday when it's like dog going to this drama. Like, it was just an unbelievable event, and it was awesome to see for Rory.
Yeah, the bar, man, they were like on the edge of their seats. Everyone's cheering. It was like, what happened? It was either that. I think they had the Warriors game in the background. No one was going to pay attention to that. And that was pretty tight as well.
Yeah, I mean, you guys mentioned it. I mean, Rory was up going into Sunday, looked pretty comfortable there. Bryson obviously struggled. I was keeping an eye on the leaderboard, and you know, I saw he was up 2 shots, 3 shots. Really wasn't paying much attention to Rose. He kind of fell off after round one. He had a really good round one where he was like, I believe, tied on the leaderboard, and then kind of Saturday he slipped. You know, we were all rooting for Rory. I thought everybody pretty much was, like Jason said. But, you know, as I told you, Rome, earlier, my roommate came home in a bad mood. I was like, hey, what's up? He's like, hey, I lost $6,500. I would have won if Rose had won that tournament. I bet him $50 back in January at plus 13,000. And I was like, oh, man, like, that's a tough pill to swallow right there. He's like, oh, man, that would have been my best bet I think I would have ever made, man, like 3 months in the making. Had that one going. Rose with what is second place finish at the Masters, career wise. Like you guys said, I mean, that back nine was real shaky for Rory, man. I mean, he was, you know, just missing easy putts, 3-4 foot putts that he usually makes for birdie, basically getting par, double bogeys, like you guys said. Exciting. And then, you know, it wasn't very climatic with the one hole playoff. You know, I think if it would have went further, you know, 2, 3, 4 holes, the more pressure would have been on Rory. Rose didn't play bad on 18, just a good shot to get on the green there by Rory. And then he knocks it in, something he wasn't able to do really. And win the Masters with that 3 foot putt, basically.
Yeah, Rose led the first 2 rounds. I think he's led the most rounds in the Masters without winning it. Everyone else that's like on that list has like 5 rounds. He's led 10 rounds already and hasn't been able to seal the deal. And he was close again, man. So close. But I'm with you, man. I was rooting for Rory. I think everyone has, because everyone's kind of wanted him to take that mantle from Tiger. It's been 11 years since he's won a major championship. Last time was in 2014. So, you kind of touched up on it, Jason. And so it's been a long time coming. I have a feeling now that the big monkey, the big gorilla's off his back, he might rip off a few more championships in the next few years.
Yeah, you could be right. I think back to like Phil Mickelson, where he just was never able to win that major. And then once he did, you know, he went on that kind of little run where he was making, you know, won a couple of Masters and, you know, had better PGA championships and stuff like that. So Rory's playing really good right now. I think as you look into some of these other tournaments, you know, puts him definitely in a better position. But he was just, this is a tournament though, where he was so up and down with the cool thing about the Masters. It's the only major championship you play at the same course every year. So the other ones become a little more unpredictable because they're rotating venues, where the Masters, you kind of know where it's at. So a lot of that maybe could turn into some style or some different things, depending, you know, the US Open, you know, is usually in some insane conditions where they got giant brush and bunkers everywhere or whatever, wherever they kind of choose that tournament. So it's a little bit different. Obviously, when you play the Open Championship in Great Britain, you know, it's a win and link style stuff. And, you know, you won't even use a driver because you got to use an iron and all sorts of stuff. But I mean, that could be home for Rory. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Rome. I think you could put a little bit of a run right now, and you kind of, you know, entering a little bit of a prime time right here. I know he's not exactly young, but he's only, was he only 35 right now?
And 37, so, like, I believe.
37?
I think he's 37.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I just think you're kind of still in the prime time for golf. That's where it's at. Like, you can really, you know, put something in, because you get a lot of these things. I mean, as big as Bryson hits the ball, man, if you can't do some of these things in certain courses, there was, I can't remember what hole it was, there was just an insane draw that Rory put on this shot, basically like around a tree, and like nailed the thing on the green, where you're just like, you're not supposed to be able to do that with a ball, and you know you're just dialed in when you could just be, oh, I'm gonna give this to the left, you know, this drive off the left, and then just hit a draw around a tree to come back on the green. And even on that playoff hole, Justin Rose's approach shot, like, what was it, a foot and a half from just holding it from, you know, from wherever he was out, but then it rolled past the hole and what ended up a putt. Rory's going slightly long, but having the backspin that basically came down right back the cup. I mean, that's about as good as you can get from, you know, approach shot that's going to go right there. And in comparison to where he was on the first shot, the first round on 18, on the actual 18th part of the hole where he was so far right, that one was just so dialed in. So I don't know. Incredible golf, man. Love the Masters.
I love it.
Yeah, you're right, Jason. He's 35, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch the rest of the year, so I love golf. It's great. I can't wait for my back to heal up so I can start hitting the links again. It got me really pumped up. But congrats, Rory, on becoming just the sixth guy to complete the career Grand Slam. Kind of craving some Denny's now. Let's move on to F1. Epic race. I don't know, Jason, you take it away.
I take it away, man. Well, yeah. I think it was a complete 180 from the race we got last week in Japan. That one was, you know, I
snooze
last
fest. That was a snooze fest.
It was
Japan,
a snooze
bro.
Fest, man.
It was a snooze fest.
This
pitting
one
it lightly,
was
pitting it lightly.
And what made this one great in Bahrain was so much better. It was literally the tire degradation and the strategy around, you know, tire choices and stuff played into hugely where we were to do from a pit stop perspective. It wasn't like Japan where it was, hey, it's a one-stop race. I hate one-stop races. You know, when you have to do a two-stop and you have to understand, like, am I going to run long on my first set? You know, when am I going to do the softer set, whatever it might be? And that's what you saw in Bahrain. And I think Ferrari, for all intents and purposes, was the few times they got the strategy right that probably, you know, secured them fourth and fifth in that race. So that was like a good piece from there. But and then all of a sudden you look at Red Bull's car with Verstappen. You know, that thing was terrible. They had some of the worst stuff going on where the pit light didn't work
that was pretty crazy.
So the pit light wasn't working for both Yuki and Verstappen. So the guys are like,
even their emergency pit light, the guy with the holding one wasn't working. He's like, what's this yellow blinking light? What the fuck?
Yeah, it was all sorts of wrong. The only thing I will say was I was going to mention this, Aaron and I were texting back and forth during the race. We're talking how disastrous this was for Red Bull. How good Verstappen is though. All of these things go wrong, still finishes in sixth place. It's just like, it does not matter. I mean, anyone else that's outside the points, and Verstappen kind of wheels that car kind of back into. But all in all, out race. Piastri, Aaron texted me on Saturday after the qualifying, said McLaren's looked dominant. And I said it was Piastri's race to lose, and it was. He came out, was dominant, ran the tires right, never really gave anyone a chance. George Russell, I want to talk a little bit more about George Russell. Finished his second. His car basically, his steering wheel basically fell apart towards the end of the race. Was getting no information whatsoever about the car. So imagine driving, your dash just goes out.
Yeah,
and you have no idea. And that's basically what happened to George Russell. Had no communication aspect. Car was just basically dying down the stretch. But I mean, looking to look at all season for Russell right now, you know, he's fourth in the points, only six behind Verstappen, who won a race. You know, George has basically been competitive as a top four car all year. A lot of questions around him. Could he be the lead driver? You know, Lewis Hamilton leaves Mercedes, and, you know, the next prodigy is right behind him in Kimi Antonelli. Where's going to be George Russell? This is really a prove-it year. This is a contract year for George Russell, really, to stay at Mercedes. And the threat's been looming is whether they're going to extend him or not. And he's coming out and really putting some incredible performances. And I think this was another example here where qualified well, stayed up there, challenged the McLaren, you know, had a little bit of a battle with Lando throughout some of the race. But he had a pretty successful was still successful and was able to finish second. So really great race from him. Lando charged through the field early, but then we understand why he charged through the field early, because he basically had a rolling start out of the blocks because he wasn't completely in his kind of starting block. So then had to serve a 5 second penalty, served it, still got back up to the field, finished his third with the podium, just showing how good that McLaren car is. And then I mentioned the Ferraris finished at fourth and fifth. Good strategy by them. You know, Leclerc and Hamilton, I think, got most out of the car. Hamilton was able to kind of rise to the field. Really exciting race. Everything came down to some of the tire strategies and where teams were, you know, were pitting and what they were doing. Verstappen got on the hards early at the first stop. Wasn't really great. The mediums were going. I think the McLarens basically ran medium. Out of the gates, and like that was like, hey, it's going to be a two-stop race guaranteed, and got the most out of that car. So I love Bahrain surface. They said it a ton on the broadcast. They've been racing there 20 plus years. They've never resurfaced the track, and so you go into a lot of these, you know, circuits and stuff like that. They perfectly manicure. It's like, you know, very smooth and everything like that. This, you look at that surface, man, that looks like us driving down some of these roads in Southern California, or heck, probably even in San Francisco where Rome's at too, with some of the stuff. So a little bit beat up, man. It's a little grainy. Really takes it out of the tires. And I think, you know, that just, it makes the strategy and what you're doing, it makes these races a lot more thinking, rather than just like, hey, it's not just a Saturday race on qualifying and we're just going to run it till the clock runs out. There's going to be some intentional great driving going around, and the team's doing the right thing from a strategy standpoint. So
yeah, a couple things. I remember when I think it was after like one of the flags when things slowed down, Norris passed Hamilton, but did it where you couldn't do it, so they told him to give a position, otherwise he'd take
He went outside the lines.
Like, why are some sections allowable and some sections are not?
It's not allowable on any of the sections. Basically, majority of the reasons, you can't get all four tires outside of the line. So when you go outside the racing lines of the track, so it'd be like a white line generally, you can put two tires out, but if you go all four outside of the white line to make a pass, you're basically doing an illegal pass to get by. So you're cutting the track, basically.
What's up? They were talking about the blue line on the broadcast. What'd that mean?
It could have just been where the racing line was. I don't know. Generally, it's white if you go on there. But whatever the drawing of the circuit is, if you go outside that with all four tires, you know, you're basically making an illegal pass. You're supposed to give the position back. If you don't give the position back,
then you get docked.
You get a time penalty, which in some cases are going to be worse than the actual pass. So
yeah,
a lot of, if the teams see that right away, what they'll say is tell the drivers are going to be like, oh, I did nothing wrong. But on the broadcast, you can see, hey, all four tires are out, give the position back, and then and make the pass the right way.
Yeah. I think originally Lando was like, hey, he didn't give me room to pass.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Hamilton was like, hey, you know, he went out on the blue line. And then, like, what about half a lap in, you could hear McLaren's team like, hey, you got to give the position back to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he almost did it again to George Russell. It was really close, but couldn't make it happen. Kind of backed up. I was talking to our guest just really quickly the other day, and he was saying, like, oh, you know, Russell's lucky. You know, he's not like a good driver. And I'm like,
Russell's well, a really good
Russell
driver.
So far is driving like the fifth best driver on the circuit driver. Right now.
He's the third best driver on the circuit right now, I think.
Like, I don't know why the hate is for Russell, but he's driving, he's having a really good year.
Yeah, he is. There's some rumors. The rumor, and we call it, F1 calls it silly season, but the silly season of F1 already did start. That's when we get the rumors of contracts and people hopping teams and stuff. George Russell's a free agent after this year. I said free agent season. The rumor late last night, early this morning, was Verstappen's unhappy with Red Bull, and the internal feelings among Red Bull is he'll leave. Mercedes has always been the kind of what if for Verstappen, because Toto Wolff, the team principal, CEO of the Mercedes team, basically always regrets and has said it publicly that he missed out on Verstappen kind of as a young agent, who he wanted. And even last year, as Lewis left, there was talks of him getting him out of the Red Bull contract and over to Mercedes. So it became increasingly, okay, Mercedes potentially has a seat if Russell leaves, if Verstappen goes. Then a couple hours later, there's rumors out there that Russell's going to sign a 2-year extension with Mercedes with a 3rd-year option, because Toto's really happy with the performance and really thinks if he's done enough to really earn this stop, and he's happy with this 2-driver lineup that he potentially could have for quite a long time. So it's already kind of starting, you know, these guys jockeying for a ride. It's interesting with the Verstappen aspect of things, because where you see, I mean, I think Verstappen's probably the best in the world right now. He gets the most out of that, you know, that car in Red Bull. I think if you had Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda as your 2 Red Bull drivers, this team's probably 5th or 6th in the constructors. You know, Verstappen's basically wielding.
I think Liam Lawson's off the circuit next year, man. I mean, he's terrible.
At this point, you are probably actually really right. I think Isaac Hadjar has probably earned the Red Bull seat.
Hadjar was running pretty well. He was running pretty good for most of that race. But Liam Lawson, I mean, between the penalties, the crashing, the hitting people, like, I mean, yeah, what did he finish in this race?
He was 13th in this race. Wasn't as good as his Japan race, but I mean, but he's been competitive. I mean, he's neck and neck with the Williams, with Albon. I think the biggest shocks in this race were the Haas, actually, because Esteban Ocon finished 8th and Ali Behrman started 20th and finished 10th. So had a huge spot. But yeah, I mean, you go back to Lawson, man, he has been terrible. But I think the bigger point right now is Verstappen's wheeling this too. So I think he's going to start putting feelers out there like, hey, I'm not going to race for this team if you're not going to give me a competitive car, because McLaren's head and shoulders above the rest. Mercedes has been way above expectations. Ferrari has been below expectations, but still potentially is a better car. You know, where is Red Bull fitting in this? They lost a ton of talent. You know, they lost a bunch of their guys to different teams recently, where you basically have that brain drain of everyone recruiting your talent. Red Bull could be in a world of hurt for this next generation of car next year. So Verstappen's already looking. And Mercedes, if they're happy with George Russell and he's putting up these performances, and you have basically the prodigy in the number 2 seat that could be the number 1 seat later, this Mercedes team's going to be pretty good going forward. And I disagree with your guess. I think Russell gets a lot of flack because, you know, I think it's just his overall perception for Russell. He's, you know, He thinks he's James Bond. He's a sharp dressing guy.
Yeah, that's what he said. He looks like some like AI generated, you know, douchebag robot kind of guy.
He does. He says the PC stuff. He's like the head of the F1 Drivers Association. So he's making statements against the F1.
He's the pretty boy. He's the pretty boy of F1. And Verstappen does not like him. So I mean, if he could boot him off Mercedes, and that's the talk, I like that. It's like a little heel turn. You know, maybe Russell could turn heel, because you see him coming out to the race basically like on a little toy scooter. Like, what's this guy doing? Like, you know, hey, you got, he's always to the Sky reporter, hey, do you know something I don't know? Tell me. I need a secret. Like, it's like, dude, shut up and get up there and play the goddamn anthem. Let's go.
I'm not going to lie, though. You saw the silver jacket he was wearing, though.
I think I need that jacket. I did.
Can you send me a picture? Can you send me a picture, Jason?
Yeah, I'll find it. It's something, man. It's too hot in California, but I think if I lived up at U-Rome in San Francisco, that'd be a perfect walk in the dog nighttime.
You know, there's
right
a few
there.
There's a few days out here where it gets a little brisky, but yeah, for sure, man, you get some looks and some smiles for sure with that jacket.
I really want to see what this jacket looks like. So the driver standings right now, Norris is still number one with 77 points. Piastri just 3 points back. And then you got Verstappen at third with 69. Russell fourth with 63. Those four are all pretty close. And you have a drop off. Leclerc at five at 32. Antonelli at six, 30. Hamilton, 7, 25. And then another drop off. So kind of cool. It's kind of fun.
And we got the Saudi race coming up this weekend too. So we're back at it again.
Back-to-back races.
Saudi race. It's fast circuit, big stretches in this race. I think you get some DRS zones, street circuits. So it'll be a little bit different than some of the race.
Explain that to me real quick. DRS.
So DRS is the drag reduction system. So yep. You'll see when every track has different DRS zones wherever they're at. Yeah. So when you're in the DRS zone, so you have to be within 1 second of the car ahead of you,
yeah.
And you get to the DRS zone, you basically can hit a button on your steering wheel and the back rear spoiler will basically kind of come down and let the air go through. So it creates less drag on the car and you pick up, like, let's just say 10, 15 miles per hour, potentially in the long stretch. So it allows you an opportunity to pass the car. So it's basically giving you a turbo boost in the car behind you. So if you're attempting the pass, that's where it goes. So it really puts the incentive to pass a little more. And some of these crates, like Vegas, basically the strip is a DRS zone. So you go down the strip. It's about half of the Vegas strip in that circuit where it's at. So it allows you to go, 200 plus miles an hour.
Yeah.
Down where, hey, a guy who doesn't have DRS is maybe go 190, 195, and you get to go to 210. You get to pass them in the stretch, and then it'll allow. So it creates more passing. Some circuits have terrible DRS zones. Like, they're too short. You can't get a good entry point.
Yeah.
In Saudi Arabia, there's some pretty good opportunities to do that. And street circuits, just a little more rough on the tires. So
there was a point where Russell accidentally used it, and they were talking about he was going to get docked. I'm assuming he didn't get docked, right? And
no,
because he was having issues anyways with everything else. So.
Yeah, he turned it off right away and actually slowed down to make up for the compensation of it. And so, like, they tallied it, like, he only used it for he actually lost an advantage doing it by slowing down. So he did maintain second place after review. No penalty.
Yeah, he did that right. I think that's where you get into where they judge these things, and they all this stuff is technology tracked and everything. So they were able to probably have readings the team was able to present as far as him accidentally opening it and then closing it. And then, they have readings on what you do with the accelerator. So if he backs off and all of a sudden on the gas and all of a sudden he's losing time, hey, he didn't get an advantage out of what he accidentally did with putting the wing down. So smart move by him, because if he didn't do that and they're just trying to play some BS saying I did that, they're going to have the tracking of what you actually did and did not do. And it could have cost him second place,
because
it potentially gives him, a 3 to 5 second penalty, and that puts Lando in second and he goes to third or potentially fourth, depending on what the severity was.
Yeah. Fourth, it looks like, if he would have got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I believe Ferrari Charles would have gotten third if that was the case, but yeah, I think they said he gained 2/10 of a second, and then by slowing down, he actually gave up like almost 3/10. So yeah, and in the long run, it actually hurt him, like he said. So, but yeah, like Jason said, it's all track technology. Like, no advantage, no penalty. Second place finish for Russell.
Awesome. F1 in the books. Bahrain Grand Prix. It was a pretty fun race. Glad I
that
got
was the best race of the year.
That.
That was the funnest race of the year.
Most definitely.
Outside of Australia just being a crash and did not finish, this was the best one.
So the next one is this weekend?
Yeah.
This weekend.
I think another 8 o'clock in the morning, or is it 7?
10.
10? Okay.
Sunday, Easter, 4:20. Lots of things going down.
Jason, you got a big weekend with WrestleMania and everything. Wow.
Ooh,
you're going to look like, you'll be looking like Rome times like two.
It's going to be a long weekend, but yeah, I will Sunday morning I'm probably going to have to find a nice sports book to watch WrestleMania or Formula One prior to WrestleMania. And that'll be coming off of WrestleMania Saturday, into Sunday, so we'll see.
All right, we'll take a quick break when we come back. NBA Time for a little NBA action, man. It's playoffs time. I am super excited. This should be a pretty fun playoffs. The way it broke down on the West, I think last time we were on the podcast, it was six teams vying for the the three spots, four, five, six, and then it kind of dwindled down to seven and eight. And the way it ended up being is Denver stayed at number four. Oh, so lots of things happened since we last recorded the pod. Denver fires their coach. Phoenix fires their coach.
We didn't talk about Denver in the last pod?
No. It happened right afterwards, the next day.
Wow.
I mean, there's been a lot going on, right?
And I thought about recording like a one-off, you know, just like a squeeze it in the podcast, and I ended up doing
it. I was ready to go live emergency pod, Rome, if you'd said it. I was ready.
I was going to do it, and I was
My mic was in hand. I just was ready to plug it in, but I didn't get the alert.
Next time I'll call it. Yeah, we have to do it.
I'm getting so confused with these NBA teams who are going to be in the playoffs firing their entire coaching staff right before playoffs start.
Here's the funny thing. You got Taylor Jenkins from Memphis fired. He's the winningest coach in franchise history. Michael Malone wins an NBA title, fired less than 2 years later. Yet, Chauncey Billups gets a contract extension.
Does he?
Never has made the playoffs in his first four seasons as a coach.
It's already been 4 years?
4 years. In fact, this was their winningest season under him in their 4 years, and he gets a contract extension.
Well, they were doing a rebuild, but I don't think he's done like a great, great job either.
No, but four losing seasons and you get a contract extension, win an NBA title, be the winningest coach, and a playoff berth, and you are out the door.
Hell, Frank Vogel, man. He's had success everywhere he goes. He gets fired every time. Imagine that.
I don't know. Aaron, Rome, you're more of the NBA, most NBA guy, maybe. You know, Aaron and I, a little more on the fringes, circling some other sports. You want to talk NBA all the time. Is it more of it's just a vibes thing with NBA coach? Because it seems like as these things come out, it's the players, they're like, the players, they don't really want to listen to them. The voice, you know, we're not listening to them. We need a kind of a different change in what's going on. Like, I mean, that's basically both of these firings seems like, they weren't listening to him anymore. It's as simple as that.
It's bizarre. And it really started. I want to blame LeBron James because I think he's the one that kind of started this thing.
Back with Mike Brown back in the day?
Yeah. With Mike Brown and then firing, like, what? They were like, they had the best record in the NBA.
You know what?
They fired their coach. And that's when Ty Lue came in and they finished off the year to win the chip.
I'll go back as far, Roman. That's a good point with LeBron. I'll go back as far as Shaq with Stan Van Gundy, maybe 20 years ago?
With Miami?
Yeah.
He got stabbed in the back, dude.
Because that team had gotten to...
They were a really good team.
The
they
Eastern
had won the
Conference
best
Finals,
records.
And I believe they had the best record in the East at the time.
When they fired him.
Yeah. And then Pat Riley comes off the, you know, wherever he was chilling, and then gets another NBA title.
And LeBron tried doing that to... What's his face?
Mike Brown, right? Was it Mike Brown?
No.
Originally?
He
did it back in Cleveland when he had the what's his name, the coach from Israel.
But I believe he did it with Mike Brown too, or tried to, right?
Yeah.
I forget.
He had Mike Brown for like 6-7 years. No, but he did try to do it in Miami, LeBron, with their coach.
With Spoelstra?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first two years in, there was something going on, and Pat Riley wasn't having any of it.
Yeah.
Well, LeBron was trying to get Riley, I think, to come down again and basically just did what they did to Stan.
Yeah.
I guess you go back to Magic Johnson, the original Sin.
Yes.
Getting rid of, I forgot who, that put Riley into position. I forgot.
Was it Paul Westhead, I believe?
Paul
right?
Westhead, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, I guess it's just the history of that in the NBA, man. It's like soccer. It's like the most relatable sport to soccer, like European soccer. Like lots of theatrics.
I will say hockey does this too. Like, you know.
They do. Guys last, two seasons? Three seasons, if they're lucky?
I mean, I don't know how many teams John Tortorella's been on, but it feels like he's been on at least 15 teams.
Hockey coaches feel like they just like rotate teams.
Oh, they just recycle the same guys all the time. Yeah. And then, you know, it's the same. It's the same where you go through. So I'm giving NBA a lot of crap here. It just seems so weird. I'm sure there's some historical precedent we're missing, but you had two teams locked into the playoffs, and we're at this point, we're a week out from the playoffs for Denver. And then we were 2-3 weeks out in the Memphis hire. Maybe it was just two. It just feels like you're right on the precipice, and you're just going to change this now. So I guess ownership's thoughts, everyone's thoughts, like, hey, this team has no shot in the playoffs under the current regime. We're just going to see if this is the jumpstart. That's what it's going to get us something. But man, it just seems so weird and unproductive.
So the Denver one really caught me off guard. I just did not see that coming. And then,
according to Denver, I didn't read. I did see something, but supposedly this has been months in the making.
Yeah. Apparently the owner wanted to fire him after the All-Star break, but then they went on a winning streak. It's mainly
I think after the All-Star break, they won 9 in a row. Remember, they were all the way up to the number 2 seed.
I guess it's just been a bitching, fest between the GM and the coach, creating a lot of tension. And the owner's just you know what? Let's just get rid of both these guys and start from scratch. So it's really on Jokic now to right the ship. But was Jokic tired of him as well? Did Malone? We know Malone talked shit on the team a lot more recently too on the pressers, and I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. But
I mean, it's not weird. I mean, I think Malone has one NBA title now. I mean, Phil Jackson used to always do that. He would always come out and call his players out in the press. Hey, Shaq's not in shape. He can't make a free throw. Kobe doesn't want to trust his teammates. They don't want to pass the ball. That was always Phil Jackson, the Zen way, right? Call you out in the media, and then Shaq would come out and score 50 points and give you that Superman fucking bicep. And you're like, oh shit, the Lakers are going on a run again. So, whatever the beef was between Malone and the GM, I get it. I mean, he'd been there, 10 years? He basically took Joker, Jamal Murray, and he's built a good squad. I mean, they got to the Western Conference Final in the bubble, took the Lakers, really good series. Probably the toughest matchup the Lakers had outside of maybe playing Miami there in that finals.
That was a good series, man. That was really good.
They won the title. And a lot of the players they wanted to sign, they didn't have the money to sign, or they didn't want to go into the luxury tax like we always talk about. They wanted to go with younger youth talent. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, the younger talent that they brought in, the GM, has not been very good. I mean, so you basically got a GM. The original GM left to go to Minnesota, which
that
is
was
now
some of the drama,
which has now overleaped them.
The GM wanted the younger guys to get more playing time, and there was some, I guess, more or less, Russell Westbrook kind of cost Malone the job because he was playing him over the young guys that were supposed to be getting more minutes, but Malone wanted to stick with Russ.
I guess from an ownership perspective out of this, the biggest question is, If it's a GM versus coach, and the way you get out of this, we just fire both of them from a team that, 2 years ago wins the NBA championship. I feel like you got to side with at least one out of this and then publicly put your narrative on what decision you're making. But from an ownership perspective, say, okay, we'll get rid of you both.
That's rare.
You're really turning over your whole franchise at this point. And now, what's the fallout of this going to be? I guess if Jokic is happy, that's going to keep you competitive. If that's the ultimate turn out of this, and you're just hoping whatever a new guy can bring in and there's something to go. But this seems like more of an offseason kind of move you're going to make. And if you'd make a decision one or the other, and I don't know, just seems just really the timing is just so crazy. I feel we talked about firing coaches a ton over the past, 6-7 months of the pod, but these NBA ones have been just way more interesting than even the NFL ones were.
Yeah, they were on a 4-game losing streak. Luckily, they righted the ship, just won 3 before the end of the season. So they tied
to the defense of Malone, Jamal Murray was out all those games.
Yeah.
And then he gets fired, and then I believe he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the GM getting fired. It wasn't not necessarily getting fired. They're just not renewing his contract. So his contract is up. Malone is getting fired. It would make sense, Jason said, all right, let's keep one. But they're basically doing an NFL model where they're doing a complete restart. We're going to bring in a GM who actually likes the coach and vice versa. Versus, we're going to have a guy here 10 years, Malone. And I think that was probably the power struggle. They're hey, if we keep Malone and he's here 10 years, he's basically going to become the de facto GM because now he's going to think he has all this power. And so I think ownership, Kroenke, those guys, they're a little strange. They're a little strange. They got the Rams. They got other stuff they're into. Some wildlife, you know, channel they got going on in Europe somewhere.
What?
Yeah, you got to read up on that. That was a while back. I don't know if they still got it, but yeah.
Well, I heard, well, you know, Malone has been pretty cocky for one championship. This guy's been talking a lot of smack. So allegedly he just thought, like, you know, everyone owed in the world, or he just kind of ran with like a big 12-inch dick around the, you know, around the arena. So,
well, I'll say this. He's not afraid to talk crap on any owner. Remember, he got fired by the Kings owner and he talked a lot of smack on him and basically said something about, oh, I'm not surprised Brown got fired. That's the kind of shit that guy pulls.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's really outspoken. All right. So what was weird also is that Denver's a good fucking team. Like, I wouldn't want the Lakers to play them in the playoffs. Like, they're dangerous. You know, they were playing really well with Russ. Yeah, they had a few tough losses, but that's still a really good team. So the fire your coach a week out before the playoffs, still in contention for a top four seed, almost risking it all. They could have been in the play-in. That's a ballsy fucking move, and it almost cost them pretty dearly.
Yeah, I mean, I heard some other stuff, too. I don't know if it's true or not. I heard it on one of the other shows, but they were, like, saying, because the new coach that took over is Rick Edelman's son, and they were basically saying, like, you know, Joker's basically calling all the plays and everything now in timeouts. He's basically drawing up and calling plays. Like, that's where it's at. Now they beat up on the Rockets and a couple other teams that had already given up and already locked into playoff spots. So I don't really take much into consideration that they won three of their final four. I like the Clippers to beat them in the first round. I think Denver's one and done. I'm going to take the Clippers to get past them in round one.
Rockets rested their guys for the last few games.
Yeah, because they've been locked into the two.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about Budenholzer getting fired real quick then, and we'll review this whole thing. Because Phoenix, 36-46, way under the projected totals. Aaron, this was your pick to win the Pacific and Western Conference to be the number one seed. You had them winning 60-plus games. That was a projection in the beginning of the season. And you weren't the only one. A lot of people were up on the Phoenix Suns.
I will go to my defense. At that time, we were already like 11 games in. I think the team was 9-2. Then Durant got hurt. And it was like all downhill from there. With Durant in the lineup, they actually have above 500 record, but it was not a great call.
Don't let him corner you, man. His idol Bill Simmons, I think, was all over the Suns too. So,
he was actually. He doesn't remember that.
He was actually.
You know, we're getting a lot of Clipper love, and no mention of me being at Intuit Dome spreading the love. It's all about Bill Simmons. That's it.
Yeah, I got to meet a lot of the Clipper media, took care of them at the restaurant.
They'd be
the
like, hey, dog, we met AT at fucking, you know, Intuit Dome. He knows his shit. Like, we're on the show. Like, no love, bro.
They actually like their chances to go on a deep playoff run.
I do, too. I'm going to go on the record right now, since you already bashed me with the Suns. I say the Clippers get further than the Lakers in the playoffs.
Ooh.
Well, they did end the season well. They won 8 games, 9-1, lost 10.
Rome quickly pivoting, man. You know, Aaron, he calls Aaron number one Laker hater, and he's just like, oh man, he might. Rome's face was like, he might be right. I think
Aaron's
right.
I'll tell you this: the Lakers have the gauntlet to get through the West. They got the worst matchup with Minnesota. If they get lucky and get by them, Houston's a terrible matchup, and then they get the Thunder. That's a brutal, brutal stretch. If they get to the finals, they will have earned it. If it's at those three teams, which I believe it will be, if they get that far.
I think
Minnesota beats them in round one, though.
I don't think so.
I think Ant-Man punks LeBron, and Minnesota gets revenge on Luka. I'm taking the T-Wolves, too. I'm on record right now. Stamp it. Put a hot mark on that right now. Give me the T-Wolves over the Lakers. In 7. They beat them in 7 at the Crypto.
Yeah. I'm not buying it. But you look at, I always like, when it comes to playoff matches, like, who has the best basketball player on the court at any given moment? This one's a pretty tough one because I'm actually a big Ant guy. I think he was on my top 5 of my rankings before the season started.
He was until you showed it to what's her name? Nicole. What's her name?
Oh yeah, Nicole.
And then she basically she didn't reply back after she saw your top five. no credibility in that, bro.
No, I gave her 10. Yeah, no, she asked for it. That was really cool. So Clippers. Let's do Lakers Tims. So is it Luka or Ant as the best player in that series?
I got Ant-Man.
Who are the top five players in that series?
It's going to be what? You got Ant, LeBron, you got Luka. Probably Reeves. I'd throw Reeves in there. And probably Randall, I guess, would be number five.
Yeah. It's a three-headed monster. Like, that's why I like the Lakers so much. But you're right, though. That's a tough matchup. That's like probably the worst scenario for the Lakers. But 6-7 games, tough. Tough as nails. That's going to bring it to them, at least for a game or two.
What is Gobert's role in that series? Because he's always the weird one where they, hey, this guy's like defensive player of the year type stuff. But depending which team they play, he may be starting or he may not play at all because he's a liability at some point. The Lakers, I think, is a team, though, that they always have him out on the floor given their size. But I mean, that was kind of the Anthony Davis stuff. Is he still on the court in this series?
Yeah, Lakers are a pretty big team, but I'm pretty sure they wish they had Williams from that Charlotte trade because it is missing. But as long as they have their bigs rolling to the center and Luka or Reeves or LeBron are facilitating the offense, they're going to be really solid. The problem, it's a bad matchup in the sense that the Lakers like to go small. They want to go fast and small. And Minnesota not as much. They're a little bit more old school strategic in that sense. I don't know.
I think Minnesota would be fine. I mean, if Jackson Hayes is on the court, you'll see Gobert. Jackson Hayes probably going to be like 20, 22 minutes. So maybe Gobert gets you 25. Yeah, he's a liability if they go small, but I like the players that they've got. They've got what now is Reed they can bring in. They've got Minnesota's really deep and they're playing
it's a good team. I like
that. They kind of fell apart when Randall got hurt, but since he's came back, I want to say they got one of the top three records in the West.
They've been kind of figuring it out in the later part of the season.
And, it's a good team. You've got the T-Wolves got a lot to prove because you've got LeBron and Luka. LeBron obviously being the king. Luka knocked these guys out last year. Randall would love nothing more than to knock LeBron out after he shipped him out of town. There's a lot of storylines in this game. And Minnesota, I told Roma, I said Minnesota's the worst matchup the Lakers could have got, man. The worst. They were praying for the Warriors to win. Praying for the Warriors to win because that would have been a much easier matchup for them.
Well, that would have been a 4 or 5 game series.
6 tops, but
yeah. Nuggets Clippers. That's a tough one. I think the best guy, obviously, is Doncic. So, or not Doncic. Sorry. I'm still thinking about the Lakers. Joker. Jamal Murray, Kawhi looks really good. Not as fast as like years ago, but he's looking pretty solid. What's the average now? Like 20, 22 plus now a game. Harden's looking really nice. They got the former Lakers center on the Clippers as well. He's been playing really nice.
I like the Clippers. I think I already said it earlier. Clippers are going to beat the Nuggets.
How many games?
I'll say 6.
6. Because of Joker?
Ty Lue's obviously got an advantage here coaching. I think that's a big advantage. And then if the Nuggets really want to go to their youth players against a veteran team like the Clippers, Clippers have been playing pretty good ball down the stretch here. I mean, that was a big win against the Warriors. That was a grueling game 7 type feel. Like,
that was really big.
You had Curry at his best. I mean, Butler was playing really good. They managed to get that win. The Nuggets, I don't know where they're at right now mentally. Jamal Murray, is he in shape? Is he not? I mean, the only thing that worries me with the Clippers is, playoffs are starting. Is Kawhi going to play one game, get you like 35 points, and then be out for the rest of the series like a sprained MCL or something stupid that always pops up. So let's wait and see.
You know, it's crazy. Nuggets are favored in game one.
They'll probably be favored in every home game. I'll check the series price right now. I'm going to check the series price. That's what counts.
Yeah, why don't you bring all those up? While you do that, I guess we're going to wait to see who the Thunder and Rockets play. Any prediction for the play-in? Golden State and Memphis?
I think Golden State probably obviously has the advantage there. Memphis, we just talked about their coaching situation and what they did down the stretch. Yeah. They obviously said tough loss versus the Clippers, but obviously, I mean, when the Warriors have it, I think they do. I think I think they get in. I would say that you're probably going to see the Golden State versus Houston. They get up to that, I guess, 7 seed to go versus Houston.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think regardless who wins or loses between Memphis and the Warriors, they're going to beat either the Kings or Mavericks, whoever wins those games. So I think both those teams will get in. But I'll agree. I think with Jason, Warriors get 7, which is a bad matchup of Houston for them. And then I'll say Memphis beats whoever comes out of that Mavericks-Kings game, and then they'll go to OKC to start that series.
Oh, so Memphis gets the 8th?
Yeah.
Okay. You don't like Dallas's chances?
I mean, for Dallas to go into Sacramento and win and then travel 2 nights later and win in Memphis with that roster, with the injuries they've had, it'll be tough.
That's fair.
And I would rather see Memphis because Memphis is more healthier. I think it can pit up a better fight and run than a kind of a banged up, you know. Dallas just doesn't have the guard play to be, I think, competitive in a 7-game series against OKC or Houston, whoever they play.
Memphis could make that series against the Thunder pretty entertaining. At least, I think it would be a really fun 6-game series. I think they could steal a couple. All right. We'll go to the East then. Caps number 1, Celtics number 2. So we'll see who goes there. Let's talk about the play-in. Your guys' team, the Chicago Bulls, play Wednesday night against Miami, and then you have Atlanta and Orlando tomorrow night. Who you guys like to make it out of there?
Well, obviously the Bulls are beating the Heat. I mean, lock of the century right there, Roma. We've been talking to you about the Bulls for weeks now. And Miami, what do they got? Tyler Hero? Is Bam going to be playing?
That's about it.
Wiggins, I don't know. But they've been in free fall. This is the worst Heat team in quite a long time. Yeah. They've been reeling all year. I think the luckiest part of the Heat, I mean the Bulls are, I'm going to say they're not going to play in a hard division too, but the first time in NBA history that a division winner did not have a winning record with the Orlando Magic. Southeast Division, Orlando Magic, division winners.
I didn't even
41 and 41.
Yeah.
The Heat are third place in that division at 37 and 45. So the fact that the Heat play in a division that's got a team that won 18 and 19 games, I think they just played some putrid opponents inside their division is the only reason they're kind of there. Is the otherwise, you know, Miami fans not happy with this team's performance the entire year. The drama around Jimmy Butler really torpedoed the season. Yeah. I think they're out pretty quick. I think the Bulls win this game. I like the Magic. I think they've just been a really good team on the cusp all year. I think you'll be looking at, you know, Magic Bulls in that second game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the Magic are going to beat the Hawks. I do like the Bulls to beat the Heat. It will be tough. I mean, they just played a few nights ago. Tough battle there at the old United Center. Bulls got the win. Bulls have not played well this year against the Hawks. So that game would be in Atlanta. Being a Bulls fan, I'd like to see them win. I think it's going to be awfully tough, even as well as they've been playing, to get 2 straight wins. We'll see if it happens. But, yeah, I'll take Orlando and in Atlanta. I'll take those 2 teams to get the final spots. The Bulls just not played well against Atlanta all year. I just don't have any confidence.
Atlanta's only 2 years out from being in the Eastern Conference Finals. What happened?
I'll say this too. If Atlanta does not get in the playoffs, Quinn Snyder's fired there. You can put that name down as well. He'll be out.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. I can see that happening.
I think it's going to happen regardless if they get in and get beat in the first round by whoever they do.
Where was Quinn before? Was he with Utah?
Yeah, Utah.
Yeah. And then he took all that money with Atlanta, right?
Yeah, because he stepped away from coaching.
Yeah.
I forget what happened. He stepped away. I think he stepped away because he knew whatever was going down with Gobert and them, so he got out.
He's a good coach.
Yeah. And then Atlanta did basically kind of what everybody else has done, got rid of Nate McMillan after getting to the Eastern Conference Finals the next, right? It was a quick, that was a quick move. And Quinn Snyder took that gig. And then I believe your boy Bill Simmons said, like, dude, if you'd waited, you could have maybe gotten the New York or whatever jobs were opening up.
Yeah.
So
he prematurely took it, got too hard up.
So yeah. And I think he'll be out of a job here in less than 3 weeks. Maybe 96 hours if he's not careful.
Well, if that's the case, Orlando, Boston, that's a tough matchup for Boston, but they take care of business, right?
Yes. I got the series prices for the prices that are up. Just so the Nuggets are basically Nuggets Clippers is almost a pick 'em series. You got to lay 115 to 100 on the Nuggets, lay 105 to 100 on the Clippers. So that's the only real even series.
Weird. What's the odds in Lakers temps?
Basically, Lakers are 2-1 favorites to win the series.
Yeah.
The one that I'm shocked to see is the Knicks are almost 4-1 to beat Detroit. That's really high.
I don't like that matchup for the Knicks.
I think the Knicks are going to win, but it's not going to be easy.
I think if there's a team, a lower seed that can like break through, this is it.
In the East, you got Detroit that can break through.
At least make some noise. Yeah, some serious noise. They're tough. They're hard as nails. They're a well-disciplined team, well-coached. Talent. They're hungry. Not afraid. So kind of like an old-school basketball team. I like them.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I would agree. I'm going to say keep an eye again on the East and the Pacers. I think Pacers-Cavs round two is a really good matchup.
Whoa. So no Bucks.
The Bucks aren't—they're not beating the Pacers.
The Bucks are hot. They went eight straight. They're at the end of the regular season right now.
Who's the best player in that series? You got Giannis,
Halliburton, bro, because he's a huge WWE fan.
Exactly. And we already know Giannis is gonna get hurt in game one, anyways. Odds. What are the odds that who plays more playoff games? Is it the Greek Freak Giannis or Kawhi Leonard? That's the real question. Both of those guys are hurt after game one anyways.
I think Giannis is actually healthy this time.
Pacers are going to beat them, though. I think the Pacers are 2-1 favorite to win that series, too.
Really?
Yeah. They got home court, too. They're the 4 seed.
Yeah, but still.
Pacers are a dangerous team, man.
It's Giannis.
With Doc Rivers?
Nah, well, you got me there.
I'll take the Jim Carrey look-alike.
All right, so Pacers against Cavs. All right,
I'll take Knicks over Pistons, but I do not like Knicks at 4-1 odds. That's way too high. I would say 5-2 odds, but not 4-1. Pistons can win a couple games in that series.
That's my sleeper pick to move on to the second round. Pistons. Nuggets, Clippers. Clippers look really good right now, so I think they move on. I'm obviously rooting for my Lakers, but that's going to be a fun series, though. I think that'll go 6-7 games. All right. I don't want to dig too many predictions, for the NBA because, I don't know, do you guys want to do like a... We've been doing it for every other sport, right? Picking who's going to win. You guys want to do that or just kind of go round by round?
Who do you think is going to win each conference? That's better. And then we get to the... I got an idea, but...
I think the Thunder still win the Western Conference. I'm rooting for the Lakers, but you know, I can see the Thunder beating them in seven games.
For the so you East, you got Lakers, Thunder, Western Conference Final.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then for the East, well, there's also this this stat: Laker coaches. Every rookie Laker coach that they've had has won the championship their first year. Everyone else has never won anything in Lakers history.
If a coach won a championship his rookie year, the Lakers, it was a rookie year, you're saying? Because you got plenty of guys who did not win it their rookie year as a Lakers coach.
They don't make it.
So you're talking never coached before. Like, this is his first stint as a head coach.
No, I think that's what you're saying. First year as Lakers coach, they won the championship.
Yeah.
So if JJ doesn't win it this year, you fire him because that means he's never gonna win one.
That's been the history of the Lakers. Yeah. Okay. Frank Vogel won it his Redick's first year.
Redick's got like a 3-year window. That's about it. But
that's it.
The way the NBA is going now,
you're crazy.
I think that's I think like Jason said. I mean, the Lakers might get look at the Lakers. If the Lakers get
they got a 10-year window.
I disagree. I agree more of Nico than I do with the other people on this panel, but
which is wild. The fact that you only I heard enough bullshit for today. You were saying some wild stuff about Luka the other day.
Was I?
Yeah.
I think you're making that up, dude.
Oh, man.
Got
that Nico haterade. Anyways, for the East, that's rough. I really don't have one for the East because I don't know how the Cavs-Celtics final will look like. I think the Cavs can win in 6-7 games against the Celtics. I really do. But I know Jason Tatum, he's also playing the best ball of his life. He's actually the number one guy there. It's no question about it. And he could take over a game like no one's business now. So I think they can win in 6-7 games.
Yeah, if I'm going through initially, I agree with you, Rome, on the Thunder out of the West. But I think you're in an era potentially now. You don't want to hear this as a Lakers fan, but this can be the time where the Celtics, can they string together a couple championships here with this core? I think this is the Celtics. Go through the East. I don't want to say easily. I think you're going to have a good competitive series in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think it's down to Cleveland and Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think Boston kind of ends Cleveland's run here a little bit, but Cleveland's going to take that additional step this year. You know, I know it's maybe not progressing, but I think this conference is owned by Boston right now, and I think Boston's going to end up winning the title again this year. I think the Thunder is still making that step, but I think it's going to be some tough series, but I like the Celtics.
Boston's been knocking on this door for quite a long time. They got like 2 years left on this window.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you guys. I think the Thunder are going to come out of the West. I like their draw, really. The Lakers, like I said, they just got the gauntlet to get through. It can be very, very difficult. And I think if they do get there, the Thunder will be more rested, less big, intense games. So I'm going to say it's going to be the Thunder that could come out of the West. Out of the East, I'm in agreement. I don't know if Rome gave a pick, but I think it's going to be the Celtics, likely over the Cavs, but I would not be surprised if it's Celtics-Pacers again in the Eastern Conference Final. And the Celtics, they have ran through the East last year. That won't be the case this year. If they do get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think it's going to go 6 or 7 games. But Boston is a team to beat if they're healthy. And I think a matchup in the finals with them and the Thunder makes a lot of sense. Obviously, if you get the classic Lakers Celtics, you know, rivalry, we've had some good finals back in the 80s and then a couple here in the last 15, 20 years, they've matched up. But yeah, the Celtics windows now, Porzingis and other guys' health is a big thing, but
yeah, how's his health right now?
I really haven't paid too much attention to it. I think he's okay. But they also had Jaylen Brown. Didn't he just get a cortisone shot or something in his knee here? I read something about that. I will say, yeah, the Thunder are going to be awfully tough to beat, man, if they stay healthy too. So I'll say it's Thunder versus Celtics in the finals, and we'll see how health wise they look, and we'll make a prediction come late May, early June for that one.
Wait, how long do the playoffs last?
All the way to Father's Day.
That's crazy.
Yeah, the finals don't start till like that first Thursday in June.
Is this dragging on like more?
No, it's always been that.
Yeah, it's been.
Infamous Bulls winning the final on Father's Day.
Jordan hugging
the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, the finals will start no matter what. June 5th will be game one of the NBA Finals. No matter what, that will be game one.
2 months of playoffs? That's fucking crazy.
It's always been like that, man. Where you been the last, 30 years?
I don't know.
It's actually, the NBA is kind of stagnant. It's the NHL, and the NHL ends the same time. But the NHL playoffs generally usually like a week longer because they usually start a week earlier in the regular season. But with the extended break they did this year, NHL starting a right around the same time or a little later actually than the NBA playoffs, but they always end at the same time too. I mean, that's when you get those good mays, man, where it's like just hockey, basketball every night for 2 months straight.
Do you guys want to talk about hockey? I'm not really prepared for that one.
I think we can wait another week.
Yeah, sounds good.
At some point, we're going to get to the baseball preview.
I think the baseball preview's out.
I think it's gone. Yeah,
it's gone.
I forgot about it.
I think we lucked out. It's like the Oakland A's or Sacramento A's. It's already gone. That ship sailed. It's gone.
We would have been locked in doing that like week two. We would be like, the Dodgers are going to win the all time wins record, and then they've lost like 5 out of 6 or whatever.
Yeah. I ran into quite a bit of Oakland A's fans recently. They're talking about how they went to the opening game up there in Sacramento. Really nice. They said it's a fun ballpark. We should go check it out.
It's right up your alley there, Rome. What, about a 45-minute hour drive from you?
I've actually never gone to Sacramento. Pretty crazy. I've only driven through it to go to Tahoe. I want to check it out. I got a whole bunch of bars and restaurants circled in the.
I know me and Jason have been downtown Sacramento. It's a good little spot. I like it.
Yeah.
Good little spot. I mean, I like the idea of the small, more intimate ballpark, that you can, if you're going to sell it out and what it could be. Like, spring training's awesome like that, where it's, a bunch of people out there and it you can get some good games going on. But I don't know. For a major league team, it's a little different, but it'll probably look better visually than them playing in the Coliseum.
All right, real quick, man. I do want to cap off Coach Bud getting fired from the Suns. We didn't really talk on that. And then also the Pelicans firing their GM, David Griffin. Like, that was pretty – I think that was kind of, like, unexpected as well, at least for me.
Griffin, he's the one that used to be with the Cavs back in the day, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know if it's surprising because the Pelicans have just been – I mean, was the last time they made the playoffs? Or they haven't done anything in the playoffs, definitely. But, I mean, we've been on this rebuild since he got that job, and it's really never taken you anywhere where other teams in the West have continued to progress, where Zion's been like kind of a disaster for them since they got him. Nothing's been built around.
Yeah, Griffin got a lot of credit, I think, for putting together that Cavs championship team. Then he bounced out. Amid all that drama, I can't really remember exactly what with him and the owner, and then LeBron left again, or was about to. So he jumped ship and got paid pretty nicely with the Pelicans. But yeah, you're right. Zion, who looks like one of the best basketball players in the world, for 20 games every 3 years. and then they shipped out AD. They got a bunch of guys.
Yeah, I mean, he made the trade. He traded AD that acquired Zion and like a number of picks. I saw it. I mean,
yeah.
Zion not planning out really hurt them.
Zion doesn't even like it in New Orleans.
Is he a free agent next year?
I think so.
All right. Is he? Or so.
I think his career gets revived somewhere else.
I don't. I just. I don't think. I don't think he can stay healthy.
All right. So, Coach Bud, I think we were talking about it in the earlier in the year how we would be shocked if they fired their coach because you know you can't fire coaches back to back to back years. So Ishbia, is that his name? He buys the team. He fires Monty Williams after he took him to the finals because that's not his guy. Whatever. Brings in Frank Vogel, who I'm a big fan of. Should have never been fired from the Lakers. I thought he did a pretty decent job. But then they fire him. And then they bring in Bud, who, now looking back, probably should have never been fired from
Milwaukee.
From Milwaukee. But I guess the rumors are his message just never got to the team. They just didn't want to run his schemes and they were pretty lazy. And he kind of, you know, clashed a little bit with some of the guys.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Budenholzer, what he had with, I mean, he had a young Giannis that led that team and everybody bought in.
Yeah.
Now you go to Phoenix, Durant, he don't care. Beal, he's just collecting $55 million. He doesn't care.
A lot of egos.
And then Booker, who's probably the likely piece to stay around, him and Budenholzer just never clicked. So, I mean, you sign the guy in the offseason to a five-year, $50 million deal. I don't know why you just don't give him a three-year deal. You said it best, Rome. They get to an NBA Finals, lose. Then they get outs in the second round in a game seven against Luka. And the Mavericks, who went on and got beat by the Warriors, you move off him. Vogel comes in. You get into the playoffs, but you get embarrassed by Minnesota. Minnesota goes on a run and gets to the Western Conference Final last year.
They're good.
And though. Then you come in here, Budenholzer, and they start out really good, like 9-2. I think we did the NBA preview like 3 weeks in, and then we're like, oh, me and Jason were in love with Phoenix, and I liked them. I mean, they still had over 500 record when everybody was healthy with Durant, but they just never got it going. And now I think I said they owe, I don't know what, maybe $75 million plus dollars in back pay to coaches now. And then I think I told you earlier, Rome, it was an interesting stat I'd heard. I couldn't believe it, but the Phoenix Suns have never in their franchise history had a coach that's lasted four seasons or more.
That's right. You did tell me that. That's crazy. I still don't believe you.
I don't believe it either, but supposedly D'Antoni did never coach four seasons there. So they've never had a coach last that long. It's just one of those organizations that just keeps going through coaches. Like, it's some kind of crazy number. Even when they were getting to the finals back with Charles Barkley days, like they didn't. I don't know if that's true, but ESPN had mentioned that on the broadcast. So
I'm trying to go back. So it has D'Antoni listed here from 2003 to 2008. But I can't really find out any other information on this thing.
Well, Scott's... I remember, I don't know if it was with the Lakers, maybe with the Suns too. He missed a lot of time because he had some procedural problems, right? Might have been with both organizations. So I don't know if that counts too as part of the streak. I don't know.
I don't know. More than four seasons, you said?
I believe so. That was the stat.
Because Monty Williams did four seasons, it looks like. Yeah, I guess we'll have to look into that. But that's kind of crazy. So not shocked that they fired him? No.
No.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm gonna say I'm huge fans of the owners because I hope these guys buy the White Sox. So I'm not gonna talk trash about it. But the one thing you see with the way Ishbia has come in with that particular team is you've seen some of these kind of billionaires that have like a huge interest in it. They are very impatient and they are going to give a lot of money and invest quickly. And when it doesn't pay off, you know. Probably what works in your regular business world. I think you saw this with owner of the Mets, owner of the Carolina Panthers. Like they're looking for dynamic, quick returns on their investment. And they are, you know, in their regular careers, they're winners. And I think you see this I'm not going to be patient. This is my toy thing. I'm here to win. I'm giving you everything I can to win. If you're not going to get me to win, I'll move on. I'll pay someone else to give it. So I'm not shocked. Now I just need these guys to buy the White Sox, please.
Any final remarks?
I mean, we only got to basketball. We didn't. Are we talking about basketball? Are we going to talk about the Long Beach Grand Prix for IndyCar? We have the Food City 500 for NASCAR too. We're going to get into that. Kyle Larson, big win. No.
Okay. I don't even know who Kyle Larson is.
Kyle Larson, man, he's doing the 1100 this year. You don't know the 1100, Jerome?
I don't.
He's going to race it. Yes, you should. Many have tried. Not many have completed. No one's ever won one of the races, but Kyle Larson will drive. Well, I will be there for the Indianapolis 500. He then will fly to Charlotte and race in the Coca-Cola 600 all in one day.
Oh.
So two races.
Sounds like Kirk Herbstreit to me, you know.
It could be.
He's flying around.
But you got to do 1,100 miles around the track, two different types of cars. But Kyle Larson, former series champion. But, yeah, rides the Indy 500, but he won in Bristol. So that's for NASCAR.
That sounds pretty crazy.
It is crazy. He tried to do it last year, but we had a rain delay. The Indy 500 jacked the whole thing up, was late to the Coca-Cola 600 and ended up not getting in the car. So he's trying it again this year. But he's thought of as the best driver in the world. You get a lot of American motorsports enthusiasts. They say he's better than Verstappen. If you put Kyle Larson in a car, he basically can drive anything. This guy is a racer's racer. He goes and race like short track stuff, like on his weeks off from NASCAR and everything. He will race anything. So really great driver.
I'm just taking a peek at the NHL playoffs. I don't see my Red Wings anymore.
Red Wings are done there.
Red Wings are done. So I was trying to spare you. I'm trying to talk about NASCAR and the IndyCar series.
You got NASCAR.
Bro,
you know? You got college football. You got UFC 314 that was this weekend.
Rome, we have WrestleMania this weekend. And really, you talked to me about giving a WrestleMania preview. And I don't know if we got to do another episode. But, you know, we got to, man, WrestleMania this weekend.
What time? When do you leave for Vegas? Friday?
Wow. We leave Friday, bright and early. Aaron, the WrestleMania kickoff party is Friday. I will be there in attendance. And then, hey, night one of WrestleMania, main event, CM Punk versus Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins in the main event. Night two, John Cena versus Cody Rhodes, the WWE Championship. Be a big night.
Online, new champion will be crowned.
Yeah, I want you to be decked out in some WWE gear for Thursday night. We'll record it, put a special out on YouTube.
I just want to know if all the weekend stuff that's going on for Jason. We've got F1, we've got WrestleMania. I mean, what's the strip club scene going to look like, man? That's what I want to know, man. That's really what I want to know.
I was like, wait a minute.
You need that second win, you know? You need that second win going into that Sunday night.
Well, I would say if you're going to partake in the strip clubs of Vegas, the good news for wrestling fans out there, WrestleMania, you know, it's over by like 8:30, 9 o'clock, depending on the card. Triple H starting the show at 4. So, you know, it's going to be over probably about 8:30 or so. So plenty of night ahead of you as the wrestling world descends upon Las Vegas if you decide to partake into the adult establishments that Aaron is talking about.
Yeah, you can give us the list of spots off air if you want.
Okay.
That are the frequent ones you like to go to. But
watch, we end up going and they're like, oh, Mr. Zinke.
Hey, Jay-Z, how you doing? The usual? He's like, yeah, the usual.
It's like Vegas vacation where the kid makes a lot of money. Oh, Mr. Papadakis.
Yeah. Mr. Papa Giorgio, man.
Yeah, there he is.
Papa Giorgio.
It's on TV right now.
I put a dollar in, I win a car. I put a dollar in, win a car. I put a dollar in, win a car.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that
I
is.
Feel like gambling now.
That'll be the big thing, you know, back to the blackjack tables, you know, post-Mania. I think that's what I'll be looking for there.
Nice. Where are you staying at?
You know, haven't done this in a while. Doing a little throwback. I'm traveling with some family. I'm staying at Treasure Island, boys. Haven't done there in a while. You know, a little bit of a strip.
I think they renovated that place up a little bit, I heard.
Little bit. You know, it hasn't been the usual spot. Throwing it back a little bit, but right, you know, near the convention center. So, you know, I'm not going to be in the room, Aaron. You know, it's a big weekend. You mentioned F1, Mania activities. You got WWE World at the Convention Center. You know, got stuff going on, man. So I'm not going to be in the room. I'm not worried about it.
That's good, man. That's good to hear.
Trying to look up Treasure Island, the stupid island that lives that's over here is called Treasure Island, and then some book that's called Treasure Island.
No, I'll just put up the TI then. It's just the TI. You'll probably get the rapper then.
Not the rapper, but you know,
like Treasure Islands is there.
Hey, but I'll say this, you know, they will be playing, you know, TI makes sense. Treasure Island, TI, rapper show, strip club. It's a TI weekend for Jason out there. Let's put it that way. We got a lot of TI going on.
It could be, but, you know, Travis Scott, I think, is, you know, he's big in WWE right now. You know, I think he's got one of the themes of WrestleMania with Fiend. Possible. Fiend. I have not done the final WrestleMania selection of what I'll wear, but I did get a Travis Scott Wrestling is Real t-shirt.
I think
is my night two selection.
I think Travis Scott's going to make an appearance in the ring at WrestleMania too. I think he's going to.
Given we talked about this post elimination chamber, I think it'd be the last time we may have talked to wrestling with the big John Cena heel turn, Travis Scott part of that. You know, Travis Scott potentially is going to be maybe playing into the main event there with The Rock, making sure Cena comes out with that title.
No doubt about it. He will play an impact on that fight.
All right, we are recording this segment Thursday night, a little preview for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. It's this Sunday for us, 4:20. It's Easter. It's 4:20. It's at 10 o'clock. Lots to celebrate. Jason, what are you most excited about for this F1 race this weekend?
Well, there's a lot going on Sunday, Rome. It's not only F1. It's also WrestleMania Sunday.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So, I mean, it's a big Sunday over on, and Easter, I guess you brought that up too. So the holiest of holy Sundays for me with F1 and WrestleMania on the same day. But I don't know, this Sunday in F1, going back to a street circuit after being in Japan on a circuit, and then last week in Bahrain, so not on the streets. Streets a little bit different. Going by last year's Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, probably a one-stop race in the pits, so won't have the likely, you know, pit madness that we had in Bahrain that kind of made that a little more exciting. The big stretches in this race, I think I talked about it when we talked the other day, was long straightaways, so speed's going to be there. Some interesting stuff in the corners that we can probably talk through, but I think this would be a track, if we go back to Lando, where we can rely on the McLaren speed, and he doesn't have to be as good, probably being in high speed turns, that potentially, if you look at the first couple of races, that Oscar Piastri's been better. So if you look at Bahrain, look at the success that Oscar's had in certain stuff, it's been a little bit of a slower track where the speed through the turns a little more. But when Lando can get out front and you have some high speed stuff, you know, Australia a little bit like that, China kind of a little bit too. But I think this will be a very interesting race for Lando. Is how can he, you know, where do be the tracks that he's better with Piastri? We're waiting for this McLaren duel. And so what's going to be the trading back and forth after Piastri was able to do so well in Bahrain?
Some news came out about Norris this past weekend where he's been, I guess, not really happy so far with how he's been driving, especially in the last two races. I guess like comments were making rounds on X saying, he feels like he's confused right now. He's being forced to drive a little bit differently. But he got hit with like a few penalties, cost some time trying to overtake. But he's still leading the drivers for still not being really happy with how he's driving so far. It's not bad.
What does he have, like a 1 point lead?
3 points.
3 points over Piastri. And, you know,
Piastri's won two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Piastri's got two wins on the season. You know, really, I think the difference really has just been Piastri in Australia, where he, you know, kind of wiped out. And that's really kind of been the overall difference. So it's close. you know, Lando hasn't been happy, but I think we talked about it in the weeks prior where the difference in personalities between these two guys and Lando the entire year is going to be talked about, like his almost killer instinct about it. Like, as we looked at Japan, was he even really trying to go at Verstappen, or was he cool with second place and going, you know, for points? If he's not in front out of qualifying, is he going to be kind of out of the race and not challenging in certain spots? What is going to be McLaren's team orders around certain things, depending where these guys are at, especially in circuits where it's, hey, once you get ahead, do you have the ability to pass? I think in Saudi Arabia, we're going to have some ability to pass. Like I said in the last show when we talked about DRS in the Saudi Arabian Strait, hey, there's some, probably a little more ability in some of those areas to get some frontline speed and pass and make the most of that. But yeah, this is a big year for Lando. And I can't remember how much we've talked about it, but I don't want to say this is his only chance to win the driver's title, but this might be his only chance to win the driver's title, because Piastri's not going to be going away, and his kind of temperament and driving style, much more aggressive, and like Verstappen, kind of has that little bit of a killer instinct there, where if Lando continues to be too passive and then doesn't have the best car in the future, is he going to have an opportunity? You look at Verstappen, has maybe the third, maybe fourth best car in the field right now behind McLaren, Mercedes, and Ferrari, but he's making it work. I don't know if Lando can do that. And when you go into the regulation changes in 2026 next season, if McLaren doesn't have the best car, where does that put Lando in the field? And now we talk about all the young drivers coming up and other people potentially having spots. You know, there's a lot of F1 drivers in history that only won one world championship. And there's a ton that you've never heard of that never won none that were probably good. This might be Lando's only opportunity this year. So he's really got to make the most of it, I think, in every single race.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Jason. I mean, I think the pressure's on him. I mean, if you know, Rome already mentioned his comments, kind of like confused, not knowing why he's not having successful races every time out. You know, sometimes he gets off to a good start, sometimes he doesn't. He's just trying to put it all together. Like, what's his contract status, I guess, there at McLaren? Like, is he a free agent anytime soon?
No, I don't remember exactly, but they signed both of these guys for extensions. So they're both there. So, I mean, he could potentially have a shot, but I'll talk about the regulation changes going into next year. You don't know if the McLaren cars is going to be good in 2026 as it is now. May not have the competitive advantage. So I think they'll both be there, but I think Piastri is going to demand, hey, I want number one driver too. This is a team that doesn't declare a number one driver. These are two guys that are going at it. So Piastri's not going to take second fiddle like he was kind of forced to do at the end of last year when it just became, hey, Lando's the only chance to win the drivers. But if they're neck and neck all season, it's going to be on how these guys qualify and then what and what they're going to allow in kind of the races both going there. So I think it's just going to be interesting on how Lando responds, because there's going to need to be, you know, some of these tracks, I think you're going to get potentially more races like Japan where it's going to be a Saturday qualifying and it's not going to be a ton of overtaking in the race. And so I think Fred Vasseur of Ferrari talked about this. This is potentially this year's a Saturday championship. And I don't know if that bodes well for Lando. You know, Piastri does pretty well in qualifying. Lando does too, but you start splitting a bunch of these and Piastri's got the leg up. He gets the favorable strategy. He's ahead. All of a sudden these things start stacking up.
I know you guys have been really pouncing on Lando since day one, man. You guys are like trying to.
I'm not trying to. I like Lando. Like, I mean, I'm not a
fan of Lando. So, but yeah,
I like him. I was like, to me, like he was the young driver years ago that were waiting to win. He got his first win last year, and it's kind of an afterthought at this point. Where it's like we're a year later. He won in Miami last year for his first win, and he's won, you know, several races since then, but. You know, there's a lot of new blood coming into Formula One right now where he just hasn't crested. And is he going to get out of Verstappen's way, which was kind of like the showdown last year where, you know, Max just pushed him to the side when he started to challenge. And then what's he going to be with your ass? So I'm rooting for him. I think I'm pretty sure I picked him to win the driver's title this year, but you'd have to go back and tell me. But I'm pretty sure I did.
I really don't remember. I have to definitely go back. A couple of things I'll be looking forward to this race is George Russell, seeing if he can string another really good race. There's been a lot more talks about, you know, a new contract for him, but he's just been racing really confidently. I know a lot of people have not been digging on him as a driver, but he's been definitely been driving as a top five driver so far this season. Also, I guess I was looking up some stuff. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, I guess Red Bull has won 75% of the races, including the last three. So maybe like more of the expectation is like whether Verstappen and the Japanese rookie can make some noise on this one.
Potentially, but the car just isn't there. And I'm pretty sure they had a all-team meeting or something with Red Bull coming out of Bahrain is what I was hearing. I'm talking like executives and stuff like that, talking through like where they're
at. They get that pit fixed, you know, that pit light fixed, because some of those got to get fixed.
I don't know if they got that fixed, but there's a ton of panic about Verstappen at this point, because he's making them relevant. And you know, whatever's leaking out in the media, whether it's right or not, I said in the last pod or last thing we recorded, like, this is the silly season of F1 that starts basically now through July, where the guys who do have expiring contracts start talking through. Verstappen's not expiring, but there's this long rumored like exit clause in his contract, which basically it's like team performance and like other things around there. And there was something they talked about Perez last year, where it's like if his teammate or something didn't finish with like 100 points of him, like he has an exit clause or something. And at this point, if Tsunoda doesn't score any points and Verstappen still is making it relevant, you know, who knows what other stuff in these guys' contracts. But it's been weird for a guy who's been locked up by Red Bull as so many rumors of leaving. And then, you know, I mentioned you last pod about Verstappen leaving, and then the idea of Mercedes being around there, but Toto Wolff and Mercedes being super happy with Russell, which they should, because to Rome's point, you know, he's been great. He's been top five in every race this year. I think he's got 3 out of 4 podiums in those races where no one's really talking about him. He's just putting in great performance after great performance. But there's this kind of long rumored love affair that Toto Wolff has had for Verstappen when he missed out of him when he was a young kid, that if he had the opportunity, he's going to go out and go get him. And so I think that's the threat that's up there. I don't know if it's for sure, because I don't know how you go wrong with Russell, but hey, you push Russell to the side, you get Verstappen and Antonelli. You got the old prodigy and the new prodigy if you're Mercedes. But
I mean, basically you're looking at Verstappen as Luca here and George Russell is AD. You sometimes just got to make the trade no matter how great they look.
It's a good prospect that you never know, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. All eyes on Verstappen, probably his temperament, where that car is at, because yeah, as Rome, you mentioned, past couple of races at Saudi Arabia, dominant, like Red Bull 1-2, I think. And then like a year ago at that race, we pretty much saw Red Bull was going to just run away with the constructors and the drivers championship in these first couple of races of the year. And they just totally like collapsed towards the middle and to the end of last year, where the car just wasn't as good. So I don't know what they got in the tank this week, but Mercedes, like you said, George Russell, I agree with you on that, Rome. And then Ferrari, like what do they have to kind of bring to the table? Mm. Probably their best finish as a group in the last race. You know, do they get more straight line speed to keep up with McLaren in this? What does the qualifying times look like? Lewis hasn't been great in qualifying, but beyond the sprint pole, which he won in China. But yeah.
Real quick, you guys mentioned contracts. I guess like the recent trend for F1 has been like locking guys up to long-term contracts, but I guess there's out clauses after every year. And that's something that George Russell was kind of making
basically
fun of.
Like performance clauses. You don't perform this, or
well, even the driver, you know, if they're not happy, they can bounce out. And like, that's kind of crazy that, yeah, it's just crazy. Cause it's like, I'm trying to picture like a baseball contract, you know, like
they're more like
years.
They're like NIL deals.
Well, they're NIL or the NFL contracts, really.
Yeah. But it'd be crazy, though, like if someone had like a 14-year deal in the Major League Baseball and they're like, oh, you know what? After year two, I have an opt out.
You know? They're definitely not 14. They're like maybe a 5-year contract where these guys go on. Cause yeah, the turnover is just crazy. Like you can go in a deep dive, Rome, and these different guys in history and how many teams, you know, they've driven for, because it just, the driver wants the best car. And that's the thing about F1 versus maybe some other forms of motorsports, but like the best car is what the best driver is what they want. So you'll gravitate as a driver is like, oh, McLaren's got the best car. Yeah, I want to go to McLaren. Red Bull's got the best car. That's where it's at. The 2026 stuff is going to be interesting because, hey, who under the new regulations gets the best start and has the best car? That's the thing about Verstappen they talked to is like, hey, if he leaves Red Bull, some people have theorized it, he doesn't race in 2026. He just sits out a year and say, hey, which constructor got it together? I become the best free agent. Or does he stay at Red Bull in 2026 and potentially be unhappy and then get a lay of the land of, hey, who has the best car going forward under those regulations? So there's a lot of gamesmanship I think the drivers and the teams have when it comes to that.
Yeah, I know we're pretty fresh on F1, but I would like to think, because we're always talking about like the best car, but what about the best driver that fits that type of car? Because every car is kind of built differently. And it has to be like its own advantages. Trying to find the best driver that knows how to get the most out of that car. I assume Hamilton's still trying to figure out how to get the most out of the Ferrari and probably won't be like a good feel until the end of, you know, year one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely been struggling in the Ferrari. But yeah, I mean, to Jason's point, you know, 1 year you may have the best car, the next year you might have the third best. So just because you got the best driver, but I would lean towards Verstappen probably racing in 2026 and not stepping away. I just don't see someone that's won championships like that leaving the spotlight just to see what car in 2026 is the best going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you, Aaron. But it's a great point by Jerome is matching the driver. Wasn't a championship winning driver, but Daniel Ricciardo, kind of star of Drive to Survive and has a pretty big following.
I still
want to
watch it. I don't know anything you guys are talking about for that show.
You will. But the first season of Drive to Survive, Daniel Ricciardo was with Red Bull. He was the number one driver. Verstappen was number two. But it was becoming very apparent at that point that Verstappen was going to take over. And Ricciardo just wasn't feeling like, hey, this guy's going to basically overtake me, so I'm going to leave. And he left Red Bull after that season in 2017 or whatever it was and went to Renault, which is now Alpine. And, hey, I'm going to be the number one driver. Spent 2 years there. Was a disaster. Then goes to McLaren and won a race with them, but just wasn't good either. And a ton about it was like he just never really was a match with the car, his driving styles. Grew up in the Red Bull Junior program. Everything about the Red Bull was kind of there. And he talked about like the differences in the car was just never a match. So I think you do have a point there, Rome. I think sometimes you're just not going to know until the driver's in the car and understand kind of what you have. So it's some pairing and matching, but to your point with the contracts, this is why these guys generally sign short-term contracts, because like, hey, it's not working out. You're gone. I'm moving on to the next guy who maybe is a fit for this car.
Yeah, so this is our second – this is our back-to-back like night races, right? Because the other three have been daytime. Anything you're expecting out of this one? Like any predictions?
I still think you have a dominance in McLaren out of this one. I think the Mercedes potentially – are going to be pretty good in this race. I don't know what to expect from Red Bull. They're kind of the wild card of what Verstappen's going to give you. And just waiting for Ferrari to kind of get back to the speed, which they're at. You got a couple more races until Spain. And Spain's, you have like four or five races. And the reason I'm marking Spain is because they're going to be, there's the flexi wing kind of thing that McLaren had, apparently has this edge, and they're going to be adjusting kind of the flexible wing regulation to their rule or something post the race in Spain, which is don't get me started on changing rules mid-year, but there's going to be something. So McLaren's going to have this competitive advantage here for the next like month and a half, whatever it is. So once you have this thing and there's a certain bend that the wing is able to have, and we're talking millimeters right now too. And that's the thing about Formula One, you know, what is the change within the car for the couple teams that have this flexi wing type stuff and where is kind of their speed at? So it'll be interesting on McLaren's like really need to make the most out of this. Cause do they start to degrade some of their speed as some of that rule comes into play after Spain and into kind of the heart of the summer, which is a ton of the European tracks.
I'm here, and then I just started looking at the future races, and I was like, oh, man, that's a good wine region. Oh, man, that's a good wine region. But I was trying to catch the other ones, but they just say the country instead.
Well, you're probably talking about the the Italy one, probably.
Emilia-Romagna. But yeah, but same thing. The Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona, Catalonia. Phenomenal cavas and lighter style reds, champagne style wines. Really good. Really good stuff.
Easily distracted, Rome.
Any other comments for this race?
I think the midfield will probably be pretty interesting in where they're at. We talked about Carlos Sainz previously and where he's been at with Williams. You know, I thought he basically kind of underperformed. He was pretty much the free agent, you know, the top free agent in that kind of class last year for the midfield teams after Lewis took the Ferrari seat and Sainz became available. But Alex Albon's been outperforming him pretty much the entire year and putting him some pretty impressive races. Albon's eighth in the points right now, and they're doing much better. Haas has had some good performances with Esteban Ocon and Ali Behrman, so they're kind of in contention. Those are, I would say, two teams that I'm really kind of looking at. Are they going to be battling it out for that fifth spot? Aston Martin, we talked about the last time. I don't know where this team's at. 2 years ago, they were like Fernando Alonso was third in points, like for the first half of the season with Aston Martin, and now I mean they may be with Kick Saber as like battling for ninth and tenth place at this point for the way the Aston Martins have been showing out here in these early races. So I think that's something to look at for some of the midfield battles, because there's a real battle here for fifth place where there really hasn't been the past couple of years. Aston Martin's kind of been locked in after the top four. You know, does Haas or Williams, and we're talking tens of millions of dollars difference for the constructors at the end of the year, could make a pretty big difference in some of these point races where we're talking about, hey, who finished seventh, eighth, and ninth that makes a difference in that the constructors' points.
Nice. Are you guys going to be cashing it live? There's a race going on outside my apartment. There you go, man.
Hot rod.
It's getting so loud here, man. It's getting really loud in the city lately.
Well, maybe they're bringing the Formula One race next to San Francisco. You never know.
It would be kind of cool. This would be a really cool city to race in. I don't know if you definitely can't do it. These streets are tiny.
Yeah. Chicago's rumored as the one that wanting one, but I don't know how that works out, but we'll see.
Straight into the river?
Yeah, potentially. But now they already do the NASCAR race in the streets in Chicago, so it's feasible. There's some stuff.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a NASCAR race in the summer there. They just last 2 years.
I just had some friends get back from Chicago. They said that they had a great time. It was nice, hot, and then it was 30 degrees the next day.
I mean, you could say that down here. Aaron and I were like living up in the 90s, and then it was like overcast and like 60.
It was cold. It was cold today.
Today it was cold here,
but
too.
Yeah, raining. Yeah. Last week, what, it was 88, 90, 92, and then today, what, 59, 60 degrees?
Today was 50s up here. And then it was still cold driving down to SoCal, but tomorrow's supposed to be 72. Bikinis are going to be out tomorrow, guys.
It's going to be cold down here. It's supposed to be like 63 down here.
So it's going to be like in Vegas, too. I mean, in Vegas, I think it's like 65 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would rather have it be 65 than 120.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
Is it a cold 65? I can't remember the Vegas cold. It gets pretty cold, though, huh?
Vegas gets cold.
Vegas is cold.
That desert cold, man. That dryness gets you. Well, have fun, man. Have fun in Vegas. Put some money down on black for us.
Absolutely will. Maybe we'll put a bet down on the Formula One race. You asked, are we watching live? I totally intend on watching live, probably in a sports book somewhere.
Is that – what time is it Sunday?
10 a.m.?
9 or 10 a.m.?
It is Sunday at 10 a.m. 10 a.m.
Perfect. That's perfect, man. Like I'll be up Sunday. And already like blood flowing and everything.
Blood flowing, yep. Huh?
Yep. Be nice. Good to watch the race. And
so who wins this race? Jason, who you got?
I got Lando. I think this is a Lando bounce back week.
Interesting.
I think a surprise. I'm going to say I think he gets on the podium. I'm going to take one of the youngsters, Antonelli. I think he finishes third and gets on the podium.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's definitely coming. You can see that.
Yeah, he's getting close.
Yeah.
I have no predictions. I just hope it's exciting. Just hope it's exciting.
That's it.
All right, cool. Have fun at... WrestleMania for us. Say hi to my side piece for me. We will catch everybody Monday night.